Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
From the halls of assembly, you'll hear a screaming shout. Our love of Indiana is manic and devout. Everything I do, we discuss in unique manner. We won't be satisfied until we hang another banner. Us two goofy guys go by names of Ward and Eric. And as you probably know by now, we're Hoosier Hysterics. Hoosier Hysterics. Hoosier Hysterics.
Hello, Eric.
Hello, Ward.
We are, as always,
powered by
CommunityCars.com, sponsor of the pod, Hoosier Hysterics. CommunityCars.com, Hoosier Legends, talk with Ward and Eric. CommunityCars.com.
Tried something new.
I mean, I like just getting right up top with our community cars, just like put it right in their face and be like, these guys are the best. If you need the best car at the best price with the best service, go to the best place, community cars, communitycars.com. Bam.
Wow. That almost sounded like you were reading bullet points, and you weren't, because we don't do that. We are not professional enough to do that. I will tell you, Holly needs a new car. I think I talked about it a little bit before.
You did.
Went to Evan. Holly told him what she's got, what she wants to pay for a car. Hooked her up. Looking at a Kia Sportage.
You know I'm a Kia fan.
It's unbelievable. The guy just, here's two cars. Here's the specs. Here's what you wanted. Here's the costs. Sign here if you want it. It'll be delivered to your house. I mean, it couldn't be better, but it was great because Holly's been paying like really low monthly payments for her current lease. And the interest rates have gone crazy since her last car lease. So everything has increased and she's got a specific budget. And she went to Evan and said, here's the budget I have. And he said, well, here are the best cars that you can get for that budget. Boom. Simple. Easy. I mean, it's just whatever budget you have, he's got a car. And if he doesn't have it in stock, he goes and finds it from wherever it is on the globe.
You know what my budget is?
Zero.
Free 99.
Free 99. And do they have that? We say that community cars can accommodate any budget. Can they accommodate free 99?
Daryl?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. We've had some calls for wanting to know where Daryl has been. I told them I didn't like talking about this, but Daryl's been suspended because of HR issues.
Look, Daryl, we have patience, we have tolerance, we have understanding for Daryl, but when those kind of complaints start coming in, it's just a liability issue for us.
Yeah, you got to wear pants at work. I mean, you have to wear pants. Like, it's just not that much to ask.
And if you're wearing a skirt, you got to wear something under the skirt.
Daryl says to us, hey, I just thought the Zoom camera only got like the top half of me. We're like, yeah, but Daryl, you're in person.
And you keep standing up.
So Daryl's a problem. All right, look. this is going to be a fun episode because mm-hmm. we've never had a guest quite like this. It's a little bit of my different worlds colliding, which I love, and it's really fun and cool and weird, and we will get to that. But before we do need to talk about what's going on in the world of IU athletics, and I want to start with the IU women's basketball team, which
here we go
just smoked Purdue at home. Another blowout game.
What is that, like 11 straight or something crazy
against Purdue? Yeah. But the individual achievement in that game we have to talk about, which is Mackenzie Holmes is now the all-time leading scorer in the history of IU women's basketball. I just can't think of a better human being and representative of everything that IU women's basketball has become than Mackenzie Holmes. For her to be on top of that mountain is sensational.
She is the GOAT. She is the scoring GOAT for a women's program that, let's be honest, before Terry Morin showed up, there wasn't a lot of history, but I think you're always going to be looking back to, you could go to Tyra, certainly Grace, but Mackenzie is like the great figure of this era. Excuse me, I'm having a smoothie.
Sure.
I'm not getting
makes sense to have it now.
I'm not getting choked up talking about Mac being the all-time leading scorer, but I could. But she is. She's just so representative of this, the birth of Indiana women's basketball being truly a great program.
Yeah, the game was so much fun to watch. I watched it with Stella. Stella had a friend over, and the friend was forced to watch it too, which was, and she got really into it. They are just so much fun to watch, and they're doing all this right now without Sydney Parrish, which you could make the argument that Sydney might be the most important player on this team outside of Mac because of the versatility that she brings. She's shooting over 40% from three. She's got size. She can drive to the basket. She plays physical. She's a defensive strength for us. And with her out, Lexis Bargesser has had to fill the starting role and has found something in her game over these last several games that wasn't there before. So you hope that when Sydney comes back, which the expectation is that Sydney will be back, not for the game tomorrow, but for, which is Wednesday, so I guess today, but for the game against Illinois, which is great because it would give her one game under her belt before Iowa comes to town in a game that is going to be insane, sold out, and really meaningful in the Big Ten standings. Indiana still has a chance to win the Big Ten for the second consecutive year.
They had lost three games on the road to basically top 10 opponents.
No, Ward, top four opponents. Top four,
at this point, right. Not Ohio, what they were ranked at the right time, but where
but
they
right
are
now, Ohio State's ranked two. Stanford's ranked three. And Iowa's ranked four.
That is insane. It makes you think maybe it wasn't completely our fault that two of those were blowouts. The third was not. We were not in attendance for that. But for them to take out Michigan State, you know, a real, like, because Purdue obviously is not great, even though it's a rivalry game, that it's like, no, they're right there. When Sid comes back, clearly this is a top 10 team that can get to the Final Four, that can win it all if things really start to click.
Look, this is a team that if the three ball is falling, they can beat anybody. I mean, they have, when Sydney is in, they have four people who are shooting 40% or better from three. Chloe, Sid, Yarden, Sarah Scalia. Yep. Surrounding Mackenzie Holmes, who's shooting 70% from the field.
We didn't mention Chloe's triple-double and how cool that was.
Amazing. It's only, I think they said it's the fourth triple-double in the history of the program. The other three are Grace Berger. So she's only the second woman in the history of Indiana women's basketball to get a triple-double. And her confidence is just going through the roof. She had five threes in the last game. And she's had to take on more of a scoring load, to your point, with Sydney out. So I just love watching this team. They are so much fun, which brings us to IU men's basketball.
The Pacers? You wanted to talk about the Pacers?
No, unfortunately, they're not playing well right now either.
They're not. They'll figure it out, though. I'm not worried about them.
Look, I'm just going to go right to this for IU men's basketball.
Okay.
I put this out on the message boards and got blasted for it. I mean, just destroyed, because I said in the seven games we have left, we absolutely could go 6-1 and maybe run the table. And that's what I'm going to discuss with you right now. Are you ready?
I mean, I have a totally different take on these next seven games, but I'll play this game to begin.
Let's play it. Okay. We play Northwestern in our next game coming up on Saturday. We play Northwestern. Northwestern, who right now has won a grand total of, I'm counting them up live. Why would I do it ahead of time? Nah, that'd be silly. One. That's it. One road game Northwestern has won. Uh-huh. We play them at home. It's a revenge game. They've beaten us before. They've kind of beaten us over the last several years. But I think we can beat this Northwestern team at home. Do you agree?
I think we can, yes.
Okay. Then we play Nebraska, who has not won a single road game this year. They are garbage, hot garbage on the road. I think we can beat Nebraska at home. Do you agree?
I agree. So I think probably we'll win one of those and lose the other one.
No. But you said we can win both.
Yeah. I'm not saying we will.
Okay. They are winnable games. I'm not saying we will. That is not my point here. I want to make that clear. I'm not saying we will, but I do think it's in the realm of possibility. It's not.
I mean, you're really making a hardcore stand here that we maybe could possibly, it's possible we maybe perhaps could win these sometimes.
By chance. Then we go on the road to Penn State. Now, Penn State did smoke us at Assembly Hall.
Yeah.
So going on the road to a team that smoked you at Assembly Hall does seem difficult.
Yeah, we won't win that game.
But it's still Penn State. It's still Penn State.
Yeah, you're acting like that, that Penn State is such a terrible team, a terrible program.
Yes.
Compared to us, who have just been rolling.
Nothing
besides 120 years of basketball history separates us and Penn State.
Yes, I will take the 120 years of basketball history. We'll be on a two-game winning streak and then go into Penn State and win that game 3-0. Then we come home.
No, you do not believe we will be 3-0 after those three games. You don't believe that.
I believe it is within the world of realistic possibility.
You would not bet real money on us being 3-0 after those three games.
No, I would not. You're right about that. You're right. But I don't get, I wouldn't look. I mean, you're right. But again, all I'm trying to say is all is not lost. It is not hopeless. Then we play Wisconsin at home. Wisconsin has been terrible, terrible lately. They can't beat anybody.
Uh-huh.
Do you know who they've lost to recently, Ward?
Who?
Wisconsin has lost four games in a row. Oh, they've lost to Nebraska on the road, Purdue at home, and then they've lost to Michigan and Rutgers. They lost to Michigan on the road. We beat Michigan on the road. They lost to Rutgers. They got smoked by Rutgers by 22 points. All I'm saying is they are no world beaters anymore. We're at home. We beat them last year. We can beat them again. Then we play two road games.
So yeah, right now I've got us at 2-2.
Okay, I've got us at 3-1.
Okay.
I've got us at 3-1. I think we will lose one of those games. Then we've got Maryland on the road. They blow. They suck. They're a bad basketball team.
I mean, you talking about them or us?
Dude, aren't you supposed to be the optimistic one of this pairing between you and me?
That has just been kicked out of me. That has been kicked out of me.
I know. I'm trying so hard here, Ward. I am trying to muster up the hope so that watching these games it can have the potential to be an enjoyable experience. All right, but I think we're going to go on the road and beat Maryland. They suck.
Okay.
I think we can beat them.
So you have us at 4-1.
Correct. What do you have us?
I'm going to put us at 3-2.
Okay.
I'm not committing to which ones we win or lose. I'm just saying overall, I think 3-2.
Then we go and play Minnesota on the road. That's a winnable game.
Okay, I'm at 3-3 now.
Okay, I'm at 5-1. And then we finish
the season. You are so full of shit. You do not think we will be 5-1.
When you go one by one, it's like when I fill out a tournament bracket, right? I look at the first round, I'm like, yeah, we could beat them. And then in the second round, oh, yeah, we're going to get lucky and beat that number two or one seed. Yeah, we could do that. Mm-hmm. And now we're in the Sweet 16 and we're on a roll. Of course, like that's what I'm doing here. But again, I don't think, I mean, this is what I got blasted for online. I don't think I am being, look, if you said what in our past 25 games has shown that we're going to go on a 6-1 run, nothing. But that doesn't mean it can't happen. Then we finish the season, Ward, with Michigan State at home. Michigan State has sucked this year. They aren't good. They did just beat Illinois at home, but we can beat Michigan State. We beat them when we were bad.
3-4.
So you think 3-4. Here's what I'll say. I'm not saying we will be 6-1. I'm saying 6-1 is absolutely possible. I will put the prediction at 5-2.
I would.
Do you think I don't believe we will be 5-2?
I do not believe you believe that you believe we'll be at 5-2. No, nope.
I believe that it is possible for you to believe that I believe we will be 5-2.
But I don't. I don't believe that you believe that. I believe you want us to go 5-2. I want us to go 5-2.
Well, no, I want us to go 7-0, which I also think is possible.
Anything's possible, really, but not probable. In fact, highly unlikely is what I would put anything beyond 4-3. Because, yes, this team has proven it can get its shit together and come back down 18 on the road and play together and play as a unit. But every other game, they really don't. And that's kind of best case scenario. Maybe one out of three games, they really play like they're together. And that they collectively have their shit together. But it's just time and time again where things go wrong. Maybe things start well and then they go wrong. And then everybody just kind of throws up their hands and says, well, forget it. What I wanted to talk about was once we all saw that happening in the Purdue game, which, you know, whatever the first 10 minutes, it was competitive and we're like, okay, hey, we're not just going to like roll over and die. But then of course we did. And
I don't think we rolled over and died. I don't think we quit. I think we kept trying. They were just a lot better than us.
Okay. That's fair. The game was over. Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to say about our effort, yeah. It was over.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think deep down, they knew that everybody watching the game, anybody following either of these programs was like, this is over. This season is completely Purdue's. Well, we were able to, get them from them last year. We had one of our all-time great players. We had a first-round talent at point guard. It was so, so, so fun to beat Purdue two times in a row when they were a top-five team.
Yeah.
That was just last season. That was not that long ago. They're so much better than us than this season. It's not even worth having a discussion about the quality of the two teams. So what I went towards was how much it must suck for these players. Like watching that game, as much as I was just like, this is boring, this is pointless, this is aggravating, this is embarrassing. I just felt bad for these kids that have to play in this game. And I know they asked for it. I know this is why they went to IU. I know they all want to be in these rivalry games. But at the end of the day, just seeing these young men just getting waxed, outworked, outplayed, outshot, outcoached, every single thing, they were inferior and they had like 1 million, 2 million people watching. It's just awful. So I'm like, what I'm searching for meaning in being an IU basketball fan. Like, what I'm getting out of this experience is feeling sorry for young men in college. And there's no, I don't see a silver lining. I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's been years and years of this being what usually ends up happening. And why are we all doing this? What is the point of being an Indiana University men's basketball fan? It has become an existential crisis and searching for meaning. And all I can find is this is you and me and our friends and our family bitching about it. Like, that's it. Thinking about happy stuff from decades ago, sure. But really the only thing it does anymore is bring us together to complain. And I'm not upset that it's still bringing us together. And I love the community. But I'm like, existentially, it's like all IU basketball is right now. There's not even like, oh, this is what could happen next year. There's no hope for the future. As it currently stands, there's not like that optimism, that copium we can all drink together. It's just about bitching and moaning and complaining and being sad. That's what it is to be an Indiana University basketball fan right now, and has been for a while.
I think it's probably a good time to remind people that if you are thinking about harming yourself, there are numbers you can call and people you can reach out to, because that was one of the darkest rants that has ever happened on this program. And I will say this, a couple platitudes, and then I'll which I do somewhat believe, and then I'll get into a response. Number one, hope cometh in the morning. So remember that, and hope springs eternal. So there is always hope. And two, the night is always darkest before the dawn. So I do try to think about those two things.
Yeah, and that's also what's got me through the last 7 years.
Yes. And I will say that I don't discount in any way the community aspect. Yes, there's been a lot of bitching, but misery does love company. And it is good to be able to commiserate with people that care about this thing as much as you do. And people are going to kill me for this too. I think it is ridiculous to say that these players and coaches don't care. They care. It bothers them. They are angry, depressed. And people like to pick little things to try to say that they don't. Like, oh, look at this social media post of them smiling after the game. Well, yeah, they're not going to end the game and just go slit their wrists, guys. Like, I mean, I don't know what kind of self-harm you want them to do to put themselves on the altar of, I care more about this than you. They care. It eats them up inside. But life does go on. Now, I just am so tired of that. I think it's, you can argue with the execution. You can argue with the decision-making. You can argue with the roster construction. All that stuff is fair game. But when people start saying they don't care, they don't, I just don't believe that. I really don't. We've gotten to know most of these kids, all of these kids. We've gotten to know the coaches. Woody cares, man. He doesn't want to walk into Uptown Cafe and not be able to look people in the eye that he's happy with the program and where it's at right now. And Woody's not happy with how they're performing. And I got butchered that I'm defending my friend Woody. Believe me, I don't think Woody would say that I'm his friend. Like, I just don't think that's what happened. That's what would happen. But it's just, they're not good enough. Woody would tell you they're not good enough. Woody has put the bar at Big Ten championships and NCAA championships, and he has not reached that bar. He's not happy about that. The coaches aren't happy about that. They're frustrated. They're angry. They're working their asses off. You know, the staff is working their asses off to try and fix it. The players are busting their asses. It's not the result we want. But we are bonded by our love for this thing that no matter what happens, you know in your heart and soul, we will always love. And what you said is, why are we Indiana basketball fans? It's because we get to share it with people that know how much it means to them. And that's going to mean something, whether our record is 10-20 or 30-5, whether we make deep runs or we fizzle out. And so that's what being an Indiana fan is. That's what it will always be. And I am going to continue while this season is happening. And while I have no control over the decisions that could change it, I am going to try to find some hope so that those games, Ward, which you've talked about, there's only 35 of them a year out of 365 days. I still want to watch every one of them. I want to text you during the game. I want to talk after. And I want there to be the potential for joy. And I want to try to be hopeful about each and every one of them. So, yeah, 7-0. That's where I'm at.
It's called trauma bonding. That's what we've all been going through since about 2016. And I'm so thrilled to look at New England Patriots fans right now. And I know you are a huge Patriots fan. You're now a Chiefs fan, obviously. So you've really worked that out, that you just go from the best team to the best team. And that's your team. That's the way to do it. Power to you.
Well, what's weird is I was a 49ers fan until like 3 seconds left in the game. And then it was unbelievable. I mean, I was a Chiefs fan last year.
Right, right.
Yeah, I mean, it goes, sure. It's fluid, Ward. It's fluid.
The point being, think about Bulls fans in the 90s. Yeah. Think about Indiana basketball fans in the 70s and 80s. It's like, I think most fan bases only really get one run per lifetime where they are the best, the number one program, the dynasty. You know, and do we just need to go ahead and accept we're never going to be in our lifetime the best basketball program with the best coach? Yeah, probably we do. You know,
I reject that.
After night's time, it was Coach K's time, right? And then I think now it's like kind of Self's time. You know, we'll see. Like, somebody's got the crown. Somebody's always
it could be Dan Hurley.
What's that?
Could be Dan Hurley.
Jay Wright had it there for a minute.
But I reject the premise that we will not get it back. I reject that.
Look, this is what it takes to have the right coach.
Yes.
That's it.
I don't want to get into that conversation.
I'm saying
there's no point to it.
Whether it's Woody or it's another coach or another coach after another coach, that's what it takes. It along with the resources, some timing, that kind of thing. Obviously, IU has everything it takes from a program perspective to be at the very, very top. So, no, I'm not saying it won't happen, but I'm saying just historically, you look at it. I mean, the Steelers haven't been the Steelers since the 70s. They've won a couple, right? Now it's the Chiefs' time. The Chiefs have never done this before. They probably never will again. The Bulls had their run. This is what I'm saying. Normally, you got to just be really grateful if once in your lifetime you were absolutely king shit, and Indiana was for over a decade. So that might be it.
I don't think that will be it. I think we will be back. I'm going to continue to maintain hope. Look, it's funny. Your pessimism is fueling my optimism. And you know what? That's what friendship is about.
Totally.
All right. So because things are a little bleak,
yeah,
as you evidenced by Ward's Voldemort rant earlier, we want to have a little fun with the podcast. And there was a story that broke not too long ago about a very popular personality in a different walk of entertainment and sports culture, that his life and Indiana basketball's life are converging again because they started in the same place. And so we thought, why not have a little fun, give people hopefully something to smile about? This guy gives you something to smile about. Let's get to this interview.
Here comes our guest. Here comes our guest.
Hailing from Bloomington, Indiana, by way of Long Island, New York, we are talking to a gentleman who made his name in the professional wrestling business, wrestling for WCW, wrestling in various territories in Japan, back to WCW, ECW, back to Japan, before reaching just superstardom, transcendent level talent in the WWF and then the WWE. In 1999, he won his first WWF championship, where he beat a guy that I think some people may know on this podcast, The Rock. He beat The Rock for his first championship. He created multiple characters. You may remember Cactus Jack. You may remember Mankind. You may remember Dude Love. And I'll save his real name, which he wrestled under as well. He is an 11-time tag team champion. He is the first ever hardcore champion in the WWE. He's a TNA world champion, a 3-time WWE champion. He is, of course, a WWE Hall of Famer. His match with The Undertaker at 1998's Hell in a Cell is just most people's favorite match and most just sensational, flabbergasting match of all time. He put his body and soul on the line for fans year after year. And when his time as a wrestler ended, he became the number one best-selling author in the country multiple times with multiple books. He started a sold-out stand-up career. He has been a college speaker at places like MIT and Notre Dame. By the way, I didn't see Indiana on the list, so we may have to talk about that. He's been an actor, appearing in TV shows like 30 Rock and Boy Meets World. He's done voice acting in Celebrity Deathmatch, Avatar The Last Airbender. He's been in multiple movies. He's appeared on virtually every talk show known to man. I knew him for a little while when we worked together, where also he was Santa Claus, basically. I don't know if I can say that, but maybe we can get into that. But also, and more important than any of this, is his charitable work. He has focused so much of his charitable work on helping children. He's visited American military troops in various military bases and hospitals. He's dedicated time to the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, where he personally logged like over 500 hours talking to victims online. He is a multi-talented man. He is as kind and good of a person as you will ever meet. He is the hardcore legend. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Mick Foley.
Hey, thanks, Eric. I really appreciate it. Hey, I know that this is not, we're not here to talk wrestling and we can talk Hoosier Hysteria, but as you were saying that, I remember you were kind of like the go-between when I was having this terrible misunderstanding with John Moxley, who was wrestling as Dean Ambrose. And what was happening is we were trying to organically build up Moxley's first feud. And he was, John or Dean Ambrose, really yeah. digging into me on family stuff. And I was politely texting him saying, hey, man, can you lay off my family? Like, this is crossing a line. And the next day it would be even worse. And I was like, Eric, I would call him up. I'm like, I don't get it. What's with this guy? I'm asking him to lay up my family. He's laying into him even worse. And what happened was he had one of the old phones where he wasn't getting his messages. He was over in the UK. And when he got home, there was this whole line of messages for me. And it was like he reached out, or called me. I remember I was going to awake from one of my daughter's former teachers. And I got this call or this text. He was like, hey, man, I'm so sorry. But like you talk about a misunderstanding. And Eric was the point guy. He was like, I get it, Mick. You don't want to do the match with him. And it was like, that was you look back on these things and you laugh. But at the time, it was very serious. Let's talk some hoops, man.
But real quick, I do have to say, Mick, before we do that, I do have to say, if you remember, that started with what I thought was one of the great viral things that we, you know, it's so hard in our business, whether it's the professional wrestling business or the entertainment business, everybody has, you know, the buzzword, we want to make something viral. Like, and usually you can't make something viral, right? It just happens. But we thought we could try to do something with you and him at WrestleMania weekend.
And it did go viral.
And it did. It was awesome. You were signing autographs at the hotel, and then he comes up to you and blames you for the generation of lost wrestlers trying to become hardcore legends. And your performances. I mean, look, it is no surprise to anyone who watched you or worked with you why you became the star you did, because the job of a professional wrestler is, in my opinion, to create an emotional connection with the audience, period. Like, doesn't matter. Good, bad, it has to be an emotional connection. And you did that over and over again for decades. And you did in that performance, and the video went viral. And I was so excited because I thought, we're going to kick off this great program. And then 2 days later, Mick's calling me like, this guy's attacking my family. What's going on? And then I would try to call Dean or John and couldn't really get in touch with him. And also, he's a bit off his rocker.
He is a little off his rocker, yeah.
Yeah, so you never knew with him. You know, with you, I always, you had such a keen understanding. You know, you forgot more about the business than I would ever know. In one morning, you would forget more. And, but you had such a good balance between I'm Mick Foley.
Right.
And then I'm the, here is the show.
Right.
And Dean Ambrose, John Moxley, I don't think there is a line there.
Well, he, I think he blurred it intentionally also.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just before we get to hoops, I'll just tell you, I remember saying like to Dusty, when Dusty was still with us, I was like, Dusty, you know, this Dean Ambrose, right? He's like, yeah, but, you know, I won't do, I'm about to do a poor Dusty imitation.
Yeah, do a Dusty, do a Dusty.
No, I said, Dream, will you just walk with me? I just want to talk to this guy. And when I said, hey, Dean, he got up and he like jumped over the guardrail and like started like almost swimming across the sea of chairs. This is before any fans were there. And he later told me that because I had Dusty with, and I said, hey, listen, man, just lay off my family. I said it in front of him. And he later told me that because I had Dusty with him, he thought I was putting on a performance for the boys. What do you say boys collectively, the men and women in WWE. Yeah. I was dead serious, but he thought because I had Dusty with him that we were doing our own piece of performance art. And he thought that was keyword for really lay into my family.
Good and then, Lord. Yeah, I mean, it is a very difficult world to explain to anyone who is not a lifelong fan, because that line between reality and story is intentionally blurred at times, you know? I mean, look, it's what's happening right now in the world with The Rock and Cody and all that. So we're not going to do that, Mick. You are on this show.
If it seems like I'm rushing, let me just put it out there. I'm on low power mode. So the last thing I want is to get to a key part and have the thing die on me. That's why I'm like, okay, let's just get to the thing. But just be aware that if it shuts off suddenly, it's not because I'm angry with the content or unhappy with
it. Let's get to it. Let's get to your birth in the greatest city, and not just the United States, but on planet Earth, Bloomington, Indiana. Just give us literally your origin story. How did you get born in Bloomington?
Well, yeah, I mean, I am a Bloomington native. I was only there for a short while. My dad was pursuing his doctorate at IU, and we were living there for about a year. My brother was born on Long Island, but he had his first year of his life, 15 months in Bloomington, and so I was there. We moved back to Long Island. I was 5 or 6 months, but I always had this connection with Bloomington, always loved it, was a fan of the basketball team more than football or any other sport from the time that I was 6 or 7 years old. And like, I don't have any notes. You guys just have to believe me, but like the 76 team, it just rolls off my, like the names, Kent Benson, Bobby Wilkerson, Tom Abernathy, Quinn Buckner,
Quinn.
And Scotty May, who was the NCAA Player of the Year. And I think, Eric, I even mentioned, I said this in a post, and I think that's why you got in touch with me, where I was talking about coming back to IU for the women's game with Iowa, where I said I was a huge fan. I was in tears during the championship game with Michigan. You look back on it now, like, how cool was that? Two Big Ten teams, I know it's happened since then with interconference teams, but just indicative of how, you know, what a great organization the Big Ten is. And they went on to beat Michigan, I think, by 17, but they were down by double digits. And I remember crying, and I'm not talking about fighting back tears, but actually like sobbing when they were down. And I later wrote about it in seventh grade. I can't, if I could find the poem, it would be great. But it was something, you know, Wilkerson, you know, the something was the score when a Wayman Britt elbow sent him crashing to the floor.
Yes.
And you guys can look up, I don't know how to spell Wayman, if it's with an N or a D at the end. Wayman Britt, yeah, sent him crashing to the floor. So and they went on to win. And I'd like to say that I think some of my chair wielding ways may have, affected Coach Knight. Yeah. Both of them swinging a mighty chair.
Mick, what do you look, you were about 11 years old when Indiana won the 76 championship.
Right.
And even though you were only in Bloomington for such a short time, you consider yourself, you are a Bloomington native. What was it about that connection that was important to you? Can you articulate anything about it that stuck with you?
Well, you equate situations with either good or bad experiences, I think, and everything that's somehow like in the middle gets forgotten. So I think you tend to remember, I know, like matches that either went really well or really poorly, and everything else is a blur. And I just have these great memories of going back to Indiana. My dad would visit a couple of his teachers, and he would go back occasionally. And we always did the drives by car. We had an AM radio and a Ford Mustang for a family of four, Mustang too. So it wasn't like my dad was driving, a muscle car. Yeah, there was like nothing under the engine. We didn't even have AC. So I just remember, you know, you drive from Long Island to IU back in the days of 55 miles per hour. My dad was like maybe 2 or 3 miles over a speed limit. And my brother and I, even at, you know, age 8 or 9 or 10, like just, you know, in the back seat of a Ford Mustang II for 20 hours. But I equate the feeling surrounding Bloomington. And I like the restaurant. I think it was called the Wagon Wheel. It's not. Or
yes.
Big Wheel. It's not there anymore.
But right. My Big brother, Wheel. Yeah.
Yeah. Big Wheel. My brother is an IU graduate. And you're not past tense. I mean, you are an IU graduate.
Yes.
You know, not something you were and no longer are. And I ended up going to, you know, a state school in New York. But even when I was in Cortland, okay, Cortland geographically 30 miles from Syracuse. So I watched the IU championship over Syracuse in a bar in Syracuse.
Ooh.
And it was Keith Smart who sang the buzzer beater.
Right. Yes.
And imagine being at a bar in Syracuse and here goes the buzzer beater and you're the one guy who jumps up in the air and goes, yes. I think I was in my first year of wrestling, but I wasn't in a situation where I could handle myself with like an angry bar of people. I'm lucky I made it out of there alive. But I was so excited. And again, it goes back. And, you know, I've seen so many buzzer beaters over the years in college and NBA, but you know, you remember those few, and that was one of them. So great memories. And you know, over the years, I've kind of drifted, and it's hard for me to fathom how an organization, you know, called the Big Ten can have 14 teams. I think that's dangerous to the Big East has a team from Upper Peninsula of Michigan in it. Like,
right.
I don't think you can learn your numerals or your geography through your college hoops anymore. And I don't get how you explain to a kid how the name Krzyzewski starts with a K. But other than that, you know, hoops is a great way, you know, to go hand in hand with your college experience.
Did you have a favorite player from that 76 team? If you had to pick one.
I was a Scott May guy. Just loved his game. And, you know, over the years, you know, once in a while, you know, I'll just go on Wikipedia and I'll be like, I wonder why, you know, all those starting five. Especially with the super five that Michigan had, where every member of the starting team goes on to the NBA.
Right.
And, you know, I think maybe Buckner and Benson had the best NBA careers.
Yeah.
But the other guys, you know, Abernathy, Wilkerson, Scott May, were all solid pros. And Quinn Buckner said he signed a basketball for me.
when?
With the Pacers and invited me anytime. And now that I'm in Nashville, living in Nashville, I might take him up on that.
Oh, you have to.
I mean, the Pacers are so fun right now, and Quinn's the color commentator. It's they're a great franchise to be getting excited about.
Your fandom for Indiana coincided with Bob Knight coming to town. You know, you were right of the you were like 6 or 7 when Knight started at Indiana.
Yeah.
What do you like? What was your take? Ward and I grew up, you know, a little bit after you, but our take on Knight was he was just this iconic, legendary guy, and we loved him. He was our guy, no matter what he did. What was your take on Coach Knight?
Well, I was really fortunate in that my dad was the athletic director of our high school, and we had one of the largest gyms on Long Island. He not only was the athletic director, but he was also the chairman of Suffolk County Basketball. And you equate basketball with New York City. And I remember somebody telling my dad, Long Island, they play with a square ball out there. But we had a lot of great college players and some really good pros. I'm thinking of Toby Knight, Jeff Rulin. I got to see play when he was a freshman.
Wow. Freshman,
you know, starting, and it was clear he was going to be somebody. And because we had the big gym, my father was the chairman of the basketball, we hosted meaning the high school, hosted the county tournament for both men's and women's. So it's no exaggeration to say that I would see, in addition to the local high school, I would see 40, 50 men's games and 40, 50 women's games a year. Which is, I think we're going to start talking women's hoops in a few minutes.
Sure.
And Caitlin Clark has done so much to grow the game, but I already appreciated it because I saw how good some of the women were. And in addition, I did an article on Facebook about a month ago about the loss of a local legend who helped run recreation in addition to his full-time job. And it was Ward Melville High School was one of the best places to catch a great pickup game. I never got in the big game, but there were a few women college players who did play in the big game. And it was remarkable to me to see, you know, at that time when you're a kid and you're growing up, to see women hanging with some of these great players. So I always have respect for what women could do and just loved watching the games. Okay, so that brings me to the point where you would see these college coaches and you'd be like, oh my God, that's Digger Phelps and Jim Valvano before he became as big, you know, when he was at Iona College, he was there a lot. I mean, he got his whole, that Iona team that beat Louisville at Madison Square Garden, the Louisville team that had Darryl Griffith and went on to, you guys are what, an hour and 15 minutes of Bloomington from Louisville?
Yeah,
somewhere,
about that. Yeah.
90, something around there. I mean, that was a formidable team. And Iona rocked them at the Garden. That was the same night I met Bill Murray and he signed my Mad magazine.
Wow. Nice.
And Jimmy V had gotten his entire team, not just from Long Island, but from Suffolk County. And it was, you know, Ruland in the post. Oh, my goodness. I'd have to think of some of the names off the top of my head. There were a couple teams, Babylon and West Babylon. And he drew heavily from those two teams. The names are going to come to me. I can't believe they're escaping me. But they had a really good team and a really good program, which is why Coach V caught the eye of NC State.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, the championship game would be played at Nassau Coliseum between Suffolk County and Nassau County. And Nassau Coliseum, where the Nets played for many years. The Islanders play now, I think. I don't know if there's a new arena there or not. But my dad said he had a surprise for us. And we walked into a room and Coach Knight was there. And it just was mind-blowing. So this is about the time I was 12 or 13, maybe a year, you know, year or two after the championship game. He signed an autograph. So I was firmly, I was a big Coach Knight fan. Years later, my dad and I would argue because my dad stood by Coach Knight to the end. You know, I think there was one incident where he grabbed one of the players, you know, and there was Season on the Brink, the book, you know, which painted, you know, real hectic year. And my dad was given an award later in his life. And when I spoke, I thanked Coach Knight specifically for giving my dad and I something to disagree about. So I guess I turned on Coach Knight later
on.
You
turned heel on Knight.
Yeah, he never acknowledged me for the role I played in the whole chair incident. So
that's great. Well, let me read a part of the post that you put on Facebook to get to why I reached out to you. I'm going to ignore some of the Caitlin mania stuff, but we get it. We get it. But you ended it at the end of the post. You said, I purchased a single ticket at a significant aftermarket markup for Iowa's February 22nd away game against Indiana. Growing up as a diehard IU men's hoops fan, I even wrote a poem about the Hoosiers' 1976 NCAA victory. Attending an IU game at Assembly Hall was stuff of which bucket lists are made. On February 22nd, that childhood dream comes true. You've never been to a game at Assembly Hall?
No, the only time I was in Assembly Hall was when I visited my brother during his freshman year and I attended a Barbara Mandrell concert. This is before the age of, cell phones. You know, almost every year it was just an autograph. There was no extra charge if you were willing to wait. Barbara signed for everyone, and I got a program, and she signed it. I have it, I guess, probably in a box somewhere, and that was a great memory. But I've never been to Assembly Hall. I was, real busy for so many years with the rest. Like I said, I guess now, I mean, I get in the car, and time and distance doesn't mean as much to most, to wrestlers as it does to most people. But I was looking for a way, like, let's face it, this is just, is it? Turning point, for women's athletics in general, I think.
It is. I agree.
And I even saw, Cheryl Swoops, she had some comments that were not correct factually and were a little biting. But there was an article that said that should be looked at as a positive because that's straight up like player hating.
Right.
And that means when you can hate on women's athletes, they've arrived.
We had this conversation last year about Indiana women's basketball because Indiana women's basketball in the last 10 years has had I can't call it a resurgence because they were never surging before,
but
a birth, as Ward called it in our intro. And we've been one of the best teams in the country the last several years, went to an Elite Eight, went to a Sweet 16.
Number one seed in the tournament.
Yeah. Number one seed in the tournament last year. And when they lost last year, they lost early, and there was like real vitriol about the loss. And I thought, that's great.
Yeah.
Now you're even. That's what the men get. So like, there's no like patronizing them, you know?
That's what kind of treating it with kid gloves. Like, hey, we respect the women. We do. It's like, oh, wow. Straight up, player hating. Like that's big league stuff. And that, so it's like, welcome to the big time. And I wanted to be part of it. This is not something that I talk about much in wrestling, but even when I was the GM, if I had a feeling, and I didn't want to know, people be like, well, don't you know, don't you want to know the results? I was like, no, and I don't want to know the ending of a movie before I go to it. If I felt like there was the potential of something being important, I would go out into the crowd and watch it. I might be, I might not be sitting there, but I'd be in the crowd. I'd wander out and I'd watch in person because I wanted to be part of that atmosphere. And that's the way I feel about, wow. Hey, it'd be great if the Indiana Fever pick up Caitlin, be great for the team. I think they have a real chance to be successful in year one. Like they already have a foundation and they're missing exactly what she could bring to them. And so I will see other games. I really would like to do that. But I think it just feels important to me to catch it.
I get it. And it's sold out. It is. Yeah. It's been sold out.
Oh,
for
I
months.
Know it's sold out. Believe me, that aftermarket cost. Like,
where are you sitting?
I'm sitting close. I mean, I made a choice to sit. I'm by 10th, 11th row, just to the side of midcourt. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
By yourself?
I'm going by myself. Yeah.
Can we set you up with like a tour of Assembly Hall beforehand, like a backstage thing?
Yes, you can. Especially if it will. Will that low battery.
Before we promise that, Mick, first we have to ask, who are you going to be rooting for?
This is tough.
Well, officially, I will be coming to Assembly Hall to root against the Hoosiers.
Root for Caitlin as an individual, but root for Indiana as a team?
Technically, I could, but I will not be doing that.
But you know, rooting for the heel. I get it.
And I did think about it. I was like, well, you know, I could root for the Hoosiers and then root for Caitlin to get that. Because it's crazy. And this goes back to the player hating. There will be people who will accuse Caitlin of choking if Iowa doesn't win the title.
Right.
Just like it's like, hey, I was at a convention and I had my phone propped up. I couldn't see the game, but I was following the results in real time because we thought she might win get these NCAA. And just being a player hating, now they're going to add an asterisk to her record because technically there was a before women's athletics joined the NCAA.
Oh, right.
You know, it's like, come on, you know, this is the Babe Ruth, Roger Maris, you know, it's like you're going to add an asterisk to every single female record. Come on. So I think there's a little bit of that hating going on. But I'd like to see Iowa win.
You're a man of principle. You stand up for, you're not going to come on our show and change your opinion to appease the masses. But I'm hoping that getting you into Assembly Hall, when you feel that energy and watch a game from there, I think you're going to catch the Indiana bug again.
That's it.
And the Hoosier fever is going to stay with you.
Caitlin's going to be gone. And I was going to go back to just being, you know, lost in the cornfields of history. But what Terry Morin and these ladies have done in Bloomington is something that's happening in and out every year. Players coming and going. Grace Berger, who graduated last year, is already with the Indiana Fever doing good stuff. So you have your little fling with Caitlin if you want this go around. But you're going to be on the lady Hoosiers train for good after being in there.
Hey, even worse, making me even more of a turncoat. I actually bought the jersey. I couldn't get a jersey that fit. So I did get a 4X, you know, t-shirt, number 22, Caitlin. And a friend of mine who is from Des Moines was like, great to see you in that, you know, the Hawkeyes black and black and gold. And I was like, wait a second. The Cactus Jack wanted shirt is black and gold.
Black and gold.
I reached out to Pro Wrestling Tees and said, hey, can you make me like a dozen wanted Caitlin? You know, it would be and the funny thing is, you know, I don't know. Crazy coincidence, former wrestler who wrestled as Dr. Squash is a driver. He drives a bus for Iowa Women's Athletics. Mm-hmm. And really, he speaks very highly of her as a person, as a young lady. And so I am in a situation where the t-shirts could actually make their way into her hands. And it's one of those things where you don't know, like, she did the infamous, you can't see me, right? Like, which went on. And even though I didn't like it, and I saw it as the difference between celebrating and taunting, you know, and that other subject for another time, no question that it created interest in the game.
Of course.
Overall. And that's a really good thing. So I'm assuming at some point she did watch wrestling, whether she was a young enough child to have, you know, watched it, whether she watched it when she was a young child, when I was on the show, or whether she tuned in during the, Cena era, I don't know. And it's one of those things where it might be, wow, Mick Foley made me a wanted shirt, or it could be like,
is this? Well, look, I'll be honest with you. Ward and I drove from Indiana to Iowa City on the heels of a blizzard to see Indiana play Iowa at Iowa because we didn't want to miss that environment. And it was crazy. I mean, it was a big time. You know what it felt like, Mick? And you'll feel it when you're at Assembly Hall for this game. It felt like the main event of a giant Raw or a pay-per-view. Like it had that, it has that energy in the building.
It felt like a Barbara Mandrell concert.
It's so great to hear, because in a, you know, my dad, when he retired from the high school, he wanted the new AD to, you know, have his own time without trying to be in my dad. My dad's, when I say shadow, I mean, you go to Ward Melville High School, if someone wants to go to a game, it is the Jack Foley Gymnasium. It's painted on the floor. It's That's really awesome. Nice testament to my dad. But he wanted the new AD to be able to find his way. So he started supporting local university, Stony Brook University, and he got the courtside seats. There were only four of them, and the grandchildren would like to go. I was usually the guy who got to go to the women's games. At Stony Brook. So I saw far more women's games than I did men's games. And I really, again, the appreciation for the athleticism and the hard work. But there's no denying that the atmosphere wasn't there. You're talking, right. You know, you've had a game with a few hundred people instead of a few thousand. And Assembly Hall, obviously, you know, complete different ballgame when it comes to the men's game. Now, I remember Stony Brook going head to head and losing to Utah at Stony Brook by four. And this is when they had the Australian the guy from Australia who played a handful of seasons in the NBA.
Was it Van Horn?
No.
The Bulls, right? The
Longley? Luke Longley?
No. He had, it was like a harsh, like Burbick. Harsh as in strong consonants.
Sounding?
I can't remember. We can look it up. Australia, yeah. Big guy. Good NBA career, and then went back to play for the Australian team. But to this day, I contend that if Stony Brook had won that game, it would have changed their program around. And they're a good team they compete in their division. But I'm just saying, it's not the experience of being at Assembly Hall. But
Bogut?
Even there, yeah, Andrew Bogut. Yeah, Andrew Bogut. So I said Burbick.
Yeah.
Bogut, yeah.
Bogut, he was great. He won a championship with the Warriors, I think.
Maybe so.
In the last part of his career.
I love the game, and you wouldn't know it looking at me, but I was a pretty good, like rec player. I would lose my way in a 5-on-5 game when I played, up to through 10th grade. But one season, I think they had a recreation that was from 9 a.m. to 12 a.m. So my mom would drop me off at a different high school that was only about a 15-minute drive. And then I would play probably 2 hours, like free time during the afternoon, and then go to rec at Ward Melville. So I was putting in sometimes 8 hours a day as a basketball player, and I could shoot. So I was 80% for the summer. I'm not talking about taking 10 shots, hitting 80. Eight of them. I'm talking about taking 10 shots 5 times a week where they would record it. And for the summer, I was the foul shooting champion, even though I was only 11 or 12. And for the summer, and now I couldn't jump over a phone book. So my athletic, but I boxed out. I took
You hustled.
I was that kind of guy, but I did tend to get lost in 5-on-5 games. Because I would depend on other people. And this was the same reason why I always enjoyed singles wrestling more than tag team, even though I did tag up with this gentleman named Wayne Johnson.
The Rock and Sock connection seemed to work out.
Worked out, but I did tend to rely on other people. And of course, singles wrestling, you can't do that. You know, if people are at home like, well, but isn't it? It's not a, well, whatever it is, you have to apply yourself diligently to it to have the best possible match you can. And I like the pressure in the same way, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, to some extent, 1-on-1, you know, I was better at playing those games than I ever was in a 5-on-5 situation.
Well, Mick, I want to be able to say a goodbye to you before the battery runs out. But I am telling you, it is now my life's mission to bring you back into Hoosier fandom. Can we get you to a game next year? If I get you courtside seats
yes.
to Indiana men's game next year, you commit to making the drive from Nashville.
I would love it. Yeah, I would do that in a heartbeat. You know, and I've been doing some work for Al Snow, my pro bono work. Nice. Because I just, you know, I like a lot of people, I was drawn to the Netflix series Wrestlers.
Sure, it was great.
And I realized, wow, I got one of my longtime best friends, and they could use a hand. So I sent Al a little text that said, Al, just watch Wrestlers, love it, would like really like to do something, you know, not just one appearance, a one-off, but a storyline. And then the follow-up text was the winning message. There will be no charge. And he got back to me like, we would love it. So as we do this, I'm just a few days away from doing what was scheduled to be my final OVW appearance in Louisville. But I texted Al. I said, Al, can we make sure that when I exit, we're not closing the door? Because I would really enjoy just showing up and from time to time and being part of it. And I think when people see, you know, you get a feeling, I know we're switching gears and we are talking wrestling, which I said we would not.
Yeah, just so you know, that wasn't me.
I wasn't me. Yeah, yeah. But I feel like they're on the cusp of something big. You know, you can sense it. And again, it's something I wanted to be part of. And, you know, I'm lucky I get to do that through one or two text messages. And, you know, and I know that the talent, because I was doing the math in my head. And I'm like, there's not a lot of money going around. You know, you right. put 400 people at a charge of, you know, $15 a piece. You have a $6,000 house and there's 30 wrestlers backstage. Yeah. Like there's, you know.
Not to mention crew, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're really doing it for the love of the business. And I know it's odd for me to point out like one of the stunning ladies they have working for them. But I thought like this woman appeared. And I thought she was somebody's boyfriend, you know, somebody's girlfriend, a local celebrity. She was knockout gorgeous. Katie Gannon is her name. And then you find out, like, no, she's not somebody's girlfriend. She's somebody who's trying to live the dream, you know,
wow.
trained by Tom Pritchard. And I'm like, this woman could be doing anything. And she's choosing to go there every Thursday night. You know, I mean, if you make enough money to cover gas, that's a good thing. But it doesn't gas, and you can't do the drive and a hotel. So to be, and then she's just become a symbol to me of everybody who works so hard. And they, you know, in wrestling, you know, you're putting your body on the line every single night, and you're doing it for the love of, I say, the game. And it's really inspiring to me. So I see all these people, and I got home after my 12-hour drive from Houston. And I watched a couple of the episodes, and I was like seeing somebody, you know, some of these people, and they're really good. They're really good. You know, they may be missing that one ingredient that would make them more palatable to, you know, NXT, WWE,
right.
But that doesn't mean they're not really good. And that, what they're doing isn't every bit as like inspiring as what people are doing at a higher level.
Yeah, when my short time at WWE, the most fun I had was watching when I was there. At first, it was FCW before it was NXT, mm-hmm. and getting those tapes and watching the tapes of the developmental talent doing promo class, like mm-hmm. watching them develop. And I'll tell you, the people that were there, I remember, and you remember Ryan Ward, the writer?
Not specifically.
Bald guy, really short.
Yes, I do. Yep.
Yeah. We used to call him Ray Ray because he was
like Ray Ray. That's what I call him. He looked like Ray Mysterio.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He brought me a tape of a guy. He's like, you got to see this guy. He's doing some kind of Robert De Niro in Cape Fear thing.
Bray Wyatt. Yeah.
And I just thought, this is unbelievable. This guy's talent. Like, he's got this thing. And obviously he had recreated himself because he had already been up as Husky Harris.
Yeah.
Mike Rotunda's kid. And now rest in peace, obviously, Bray. But and then it was Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, and Roman Reigns.
Yeah,
those were the guys.
Yeah, those were the guys.
The most fun. And also, just to relate it back to basketball, that's why college basketball is so much fun, because you get to see them before they're fully formed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you get to see the development and the progression. And whatever Caitlin does in her career, the people at Iowa, like, they are so blessed to have that, to be like the thing that they remember. Can you imagine the thousands and thousands and thousands of girls in that area that are Iowa fans and basketball fans for life because they grew up with Caitlin as their role model? Indiana's got a couple stars, Mackenzie Holmes, and we had Grace Berger last year. It's the same thing. We see it amongst these girls that come to the games. They worship these people.
And they want to grow up to be like them.
Exactly.
So just jumping over to wrestling with the four horsewomen from NXT.
Yes.
They were really instrumental in creating that image, you know, for younger girls saying, I want to be like them. And now 8 years after the horsewomen were NXT, you're seeing all these great independent female wrestlers. You know, when I was starting out, I said it was difficult to steal a show. It was like a petty crime to steal an independent show because there really weren't that many good people out there. If you had a pretty good match, you were stealing the show. And now everybody's good. You know, to get booked on an independent show, and there are some exceptions, but you really have to be good. And the women's game has just grown so much in wrestling as it is growing. I think you'll see 7-8 years from now, you're going to see women's basketball just continuing to explode because of this mania that's going on. So I'm going to be part of it. I think I have to go because my phone's about to crash.
Yeah, well, Mick, just to wrap it up, I got to tell you, man, like I said, professional wrestling is about creating an emotional connection with the audience. You are a guy. You are one of one. Every person who ever watched you gets a smile on their face when they hear your name, when they hear that music, when they see Mr. Sacco, when they think of Mankind, when they think of Bang Bang, when they think of Have a Nice Day. You just put smiles on faces. And what could be better than that? And then you have dedicated your life to helping people. You're just a bright light, man. And that's why you're going to be a Hoosier fan before it's all over again. We're going to bring you back. But I love that your life in basketball fandom started with Indiana, this thing that we all love. Can't thank you enough for coming on the show, man.
Hey, before I go, I just want to say although I will be there rooting for the enemy and wearing my Caitlin shirt, please, you know, if you see me there and you're listening to the podcast now, if you see me at Assembly Hall, go out of your way to say hello. I'm there by myself. You're not interrupting me. I mean, I'm on my chair and it's crunch time, but you know, I intend to be there at least 90 minutes early. I'm going to get this backstage.
We're going to get you up on that.
I'll be there. By myself. I remember when I was visiting the troops on one occasion, and a guy comes up, one of the soldiers comes up to me and says, "Hey, look, I don't want to bother you." And I was like, "I'm here by myself. Like, I'm here to be bothered. That's why I'm here. Like, it's first of all, it's no bother, but." That's what I'm here for. So in this case, I'm coming to enjoy the game, but for those 90 minutes, you know, before the game, you know, please come out of your way, wave, say hello, you know, I want to be part of it. And the second thing I'll tell you is just when it relates to, you mentioned the Santa stuff, it is my way of dropping the Rock's name, but I think for 4 years running, I've been recording these videos, you know, sending them to the Rock so he can share them with his two younger girls and his wife. And it's come to mean a lot to him. And he really raised my game to the point where last year I was like, I had to get professional lighting and I had my guy do editing. Like it is like setting the bar high because I'm lucky I did well in wrestling. I can lose some money doing my Santa videos. And this year I sent mine to the Rock. And I was lucky that Santa's Village, New Hampshire, let me film with the reindeer. So if you're a child and you're on the fence, then you see a guy. No, I use a theatrical beard now, but it's a good one. You know, it's really good.
Yeah, and all you used to have it real. It used to be real.
I had it real for so many years. And but look, from a movie standpoint, all the top actors who portrayed Santa, with the exception of Edmund Gwynn, who was in the original Miracle on 34th Street. And then the remake, you know, where Sir Richard Attenborough, he had his own short beard. But I'm talking about Tim Allen and Paul Giamatti. Yeah, they wear the theatrical beard, and it's real high quality, and it looks good. And so, you know, if you're on the fence, if you see somebody who looks the part, and he's got reindeer. You know, he's got reindeer, and they're like, you know, I'm feeding them as I talk, and the editing is great. My ultimate goal is to take a child who's on the fence and get the parents one more magic year. That's
love
the
that.
Ultimate compliment. So it was like December 18th, 19th when I send the video to The Rock. And I am good friends with The Rock, but we'll go many months without, sure. with a text or anything. And in this case, I was like, hey, I hope he gets it. And literally 10 minutes later, there's this 3-minute voice message. He's a voice message. He leaves you the voice message. And I called one of my kids over. I said, show this to Mom. And I'm sitting on the exact same spot on my couch where I am now, but the door to the bedroom was ajar. And when I looked in, I saw my two younger boys and my wife, and they were hovering over the phone. And they just had this look of awe on their face because it was such a nice message. And on one level, I did team up with the guy. I did defeat him twice for the WWE title.
Yes.
But on another level, I'm a guy doing cameo videos. He's the biggest star in the world, And he's taking time out of his day, and something I did, is a big part of his tradition. That's a big deal to me. So
it's awesome.
Hey, I'm going to hold you to it. And I'm going to, as long as I'm here in Nashville, I'm not sure how many years we'll be here. I want to see a game. I'm going to take you up on that
next year. And I'll text you afterwards. We'll get the backstage tour, Assembly Hall tour hooked up.
Also, and Mick, I have to tell you, if you want to go zip lining while you are in Nashville, I have the spot. It's just outside of Nashville. And I swear to you, this is true. It is on the property of Barbara Mandrell's old house.
You're kidding me.
Swear to God. It's an amazing property. She has a helipad out there. It's like this mansion from the 70s. It's crazy. And they took it over for zip lining.
That's crazy. You know what? I'm going to take you up. I might, but not at my current weight. Okay. Not at my current weight. I'm trying to lose about 90 big ones before my 60th birthday. And maybe I'll celebrate by ziplining. But I'm not in a case yet where I would trust any zip line in the world to support me at my current weight. And the high camera angle is much better for a big guy. Like I just dropped 30 pounds as opposed to this, right? There we go. You kids,
Mick,
out there.
Thank you so much for doing this. Hope you and your family are well. And if you're out there at the Indiana game when they beat Iowa and Caitlin Mania, please go up to Mick and say hello. You look, man, it was a highlight for me working with you the short time we got to work together. You were always nothing but classy and good to me. And I've been a fan of yours before that. I've been a fan of yours since, read all your books, love your appearances. You're just a bright light, man. You just make everybody happy. So thanks so much for doing
this. Thank you. And I hate to end this on an ominous tone, but if IU does win and there's any court storming, I'm going to be guarding Caitlin with my life. All right. Nobody's knocking down that young lady while I'm at the game.
No, I think it'll be one of the great turns ever that if there's a court storm, somehow you rip off the Caitlin shirt. We got Hoosier Nation underneath and you're just tearing it up.
That's not happening, but I do like it. I admire your
there's opinion. My creative pitch. We'll send it into the office.
Hey, this was a blast. I'm so glad you talked me out of my 6-month moratorium by explaining the basketball loophole. So wrestling podcast, be like, wait, he's doing this thing with Pankowski. He's like, we were talking hoops.
That's right. And Pankowski didn't bring up the wrestling.
No, I did. I went there.
All right,
hey,
man.
Thanks, guys. This was a blast. I really enjoyed it. I can't wait to be at Assembly Hall.
That was our guest.
It's exactly how he was when I worked with him a decade ago, with the exception of then it would get deathly serious because then it was about like making content that was like, for his character. But he's just such a good dude.
Just a big, delightful kid, like he just got that joy of, you wouldn't guess that the man had just beaten the holy shit out of his body for decades, to come out of the other end of being such a hardcore wrestler and really enduring that kind of punishment and to just be able to sit there and be jolly. It almost doesn't really compute for me.
No, it's, and I'll be honest with you. I meant what I said, like he started to go down health-wise, and then got himself back. I don't know what he did, but I mean, this was in the era where you would take chair shots to the head, and they don't do that anymore, really, because people realize CTE and concussions.
Yeah. But
if you go up, go look on YouTube, Rock Mick Foley chair shots. There is a hellacious match. It's considered maybe the most brutal match in the history of WWF or E. Mick has his hands handcuffed behind him, and Rock hits him in the head full force, I think 18 times.
Mm.
And it is, and Mick's family is there watching. That was part of the story.
Right? They're like,
Brian.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Oof. It is horrific. You couldn't get away with that today. Nobody would do it. And yet he still has this amazing recall of the starting five and players, right?
I mean, like, yeah. Like I was like, I don't think I could have rattled off, 76 as quickly as he did. It does. I'm so impressed by his memory after all those chair shots, and also just that much more disappointed in my own. Like, no reason for that.
Look, I hope people are still listening to it at this point, even though I know they probably turn it off after Mick. But I want to say this, Ward.
Okay.
You asked the question before, why do we do this?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we Indiana fans? That's why. Because this kid who lived in Bloomington for like 5 or 6 months, 50 years later, can rattle off the starting five, and it fills him with joy talking about it. And he remembers a line from a poem he wrote in seventh grade. That's why we do it.
And it's about his dad and his brother. You know, it's
and his dad to being the night guy and him wanting to argue with his dad about it. Like, it, that's why we do it, man. Like, the wins and losses, of course we want to win, but it's more than that. It is so much more than that. It is life core memories.
Yeah, it is. It is just sort of redefining it for oneself. It's like this and this. It's like, well, no, it's really just this. It's really just, it's just the family. It's just the community. It's just the connection. It's been so long since we've been good. It's not, it's clearly not about winning basketball. We would love for it to be incorporated into it again. I think it would only enhance all these other things. Certainly the happy part of it, the joyous part. But look, I think the real story is this heel turn. You know, here's this guy who was born and raised a Hoosier, clearly had the right things taught to him by his father. He turns on his own father. He turns on Indiana University. He's going to show up by himself rooting for Iowa, inviting people to come at him. Now, yes, I'm sure he's thinking that is a more
friendly
type of exchange, which I'm sure it will be, unless somebody's out of their mind. But man, we've got to get him to do a face turn by next season. Like, let him have this fun with Caitlin, and then he's back to being a Hoosier.
Look, Mick Foley was known in wrestling as being a schizophrenic character. He had multiple, faces. He had Cactus Jack. He had Dude Love. He had Mankind. The three faces of Foley is what it was referred to. And in one Royal Rumble, he appeared as all of them. So it's not surprising to me that even his basketball fandom is schizophrenic. He's an IU men's basketball fan, but an Iowa female basketball fan. We're going to have to change it. You know, the world of professional wrestling, it's all fluid. You're a babyface sometimes, you're a heel sometimes. We'll get him there. I just love that he's going to be in Assembly Hall. It's a bucket list thing for him, and he gets to be there, and that game is going to be special. It is going to be a special environment.
I don't think it's a coincidence that the Mankind character hung out around boilers and boiler rooms. You know, the crazy, just horrific, scary character was a Boilermaker, ultimately. So I think the Dude Love is what we want his IU persona to be, right?
Or Cactus Jack. I love Cactus Jack. He's a shooter.
But this is a start, right? This is bringing him back into the fold when he sees how the IU women play as a team to take down the evil empire with Darth Vader. How could he resist? How could he resist? Be like, okay, here's this one cocky, arrogant player that nobody really likes unless they're from Iowa.
Yeah, that we wish was on our team. Go ahead. Keep going.
But she's not, so we don't. And then he sees this, everything that is good and right with sport and humanity and certainly basketball, which is the IU women's team. We won't need to do much salesmanship to him. He'll see where more fun and more joy is moving forward.
Couldn't agree more. All right. As always, follow us on Twitter at Hoosier Hysterics for the hysterics. No E.
No I.
You'll have to just put one in. I didn't ask him to do it.
I really wish you'd asked him to do it.
Maybe I can ask him separately.
Yeah.
I'm just so, it is the most incompetent thing we do.
You. That's, I mean, it's more you, right?
No, you're part of it, dude. It's a partnership.
I suppose.
All right, Manuel, our first professional wrestler that has appeared on the podcast.
That's Mick cool, Foley. Man. It took 261 episodes to get a pro wrestler, which is shocking considering you're the one doing the booking. I'm surprised that wasn't like one of the first five people we booked was a wrestler.
That had nothing to do with Indiana. Hey, Ward, I know this Indiana stuff is great, but are you familiar with
Jimmy Superfly Snuka?
You know what's funny? I was about to say Snuka, but he's passed away. I was trying to find one in my head that wasn't passed away, and it's like, that's tough.
I just read that he was a big influence on Mick's career. Like Mick saw him as a kid.
Steel cage match, Don the Rock, Morocco. One of the greatest steel cage matches you will ever see. Snuka comes off the top of the cage, splashes down, which is an iconic moment. But then the greatest moment is it used to be in steel cage matches. They don't really do this anymore. Steel cage matches, the way to win is you climb over the top. Or you ask for the door to be open and you get to the floor. They do it every once in a while, but that used to be how all steel cage matches ended. And Don the Rock Morocco and Jimmy Snuka were in a steel cage match once where it was a great match. And then Snuka like throws Morocco against the ropes and then flying towards the door. And Morocco calls for the door as he's flying through the air. And he just flies out of it and wins the match. It was a great moment. All right. Well, two of my great loves, Indiana basketball and professional wrestling, usually ne'er the twain shall meet. But today, we bring them together with nothing but Hoosier love. You want to say anything to wrap it up?
I got to pee.
There we go. Good way to end. Although I will end it in classic Mick Foley fashion. Ward. And Hoosier Nation, have a nice day.
That was the book I read.
There you go. Could have left it with me just saying have a nice day, but had to, as used to be said in wrestling all the time, you had to get your shit in.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's just a matter of which one do I cut it off after. Really, it could be either one of us on any given show whose shit gets in last.
The truth is you edited it ended 40 minutes ago.
It was right when Mick hung up.
From the halls of assembly, you'll hear a screaming shout. Our love of Indiana is manic and devout. Everything I do, we discuss in unique manner. We won't be satisfied until we hang another banner. Us two goofy guys go by names of Ward and Eric. And as you probably know by now, we're Hoosier.